You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
The topic of joy, it's a big word. We wonder, what does joy look like? And here we get some snapshots that I think are familiar to us probably, but it looks like this. Good news of great joy, the long-awaited child who's finally arrived. Just that overwhelming sense of the moment that this child has brought into the world. The time of reconciliation between estranged parties. And Jesus says about the prodigal son's reuniting with his father, we had to rejoice. We just had to. And we know that God is concerned and interested in inviting people from around the world to this lavish banquet that he is putting on, this symbol of joy, of people who have no claim whatsoever on the blessing of God to be freely invited and to participate in the bounty that God provides. The Lord will prepare a lavish banquet for all the peoples of the world. Think about joy as discovery. In the parable in Matthew 13, verse 44, Jesus talks about this guy who goes out to a field and he's digging around and he finds some treasure. And it says, for the joy of his discovery, he sold everything he had to buy the land. Because he's going to go back, he's going to pull that treasure out of the ground. The joy of discovery. I just think that that is such a beautiful thing. That when you find something and what you find is so incredibly important, so incredibly valuable, you're prepared to sacrifice whatever so that you could have that thing. This is in relation to the kingdom of God. But the idea of connecting joy with discovery is a significant biblical theme. One of my favorite psalms is Psalm 111, which says, greater the works of the Lord, studied by all who delight in them. And I love that verse. It's actually carved in stone on the Cavendish Lab at the University of Cambridge in England, the most important lab in human history. More Nobel laureates come out of the Cavendish Lab than any other single laboratory in the world. And they walk through every day this recognition that discovery delights the soul because that's the way that God created the world and that's the way that God created us to enjoy it. So joy has a lot of different snapshots that we can connect with, but I want to dig just a little bit deeper. The word is chara, and it's the same word charis, which means grace. And so it makes an important point, namely that joy is a gift from God. That it's something that God designed us to be able to experience, and it's in his intent and purpose that we experience real joy in our lives. And by joy, I like what the expositor's commentary defines it as. It says that it's a settled state of mind. More than a mood, although it is that, more than an emotion, it involves the emotions. Joy is an understanding of existence. I like the way he puts that. Because it's possible, as Paul is writing this letter from prison, to be under very difficult circumstances. To have a whole lot going wrong in your life, to experience real pain, but at the same time, as Paul declares multiple times in this letter, that he is prepared to rejoice, that he considers even his own circumstances to be occasions of great joy. Because why? Because he has something going on deeper than those circumstances. And so in this way, joy is a kind of soul satisfaction. That whatever's going on outside is different from the reality that is being cultivated from within. I've thought about different ways to try to capture what does this mean exactly. I've thought about this. And one of the things, when I was growing up, my father loved music, and he passed that on to me. It's one of the great gifts that he gave me. I'm so thankful for it. But all the things that my father loved, he loved Beethoven most of all. And so often he would turn on the Ninth Symphony and just play it on through, and the whole family just can't do anything but listen. And it comes to the end of this incredible symphony, crescendoing in the Ode to Joy. And my dad would make this point over and over again over the years. He'd say, you got to think about this. Here is a composer who was almost completely deaf when he wrote this symphony. He couldn't hear a thing. And yet, out of his heart emerges this incredible beauty. And that, to me, is just a great expression of what joy really is. That it doesn't matter what's going on out there. The reality is that there's something going on inside me that is so real, that is so beautiful, that it just kind of works its way out in what I do in the world. And people sense that. They see that. And so that's what we are going to be talking about here over these next several weeks as we work our way through Philippians. We're going to talk about the many facets in the gem that is joy, and we're going to put it together in a way that really helps us see what this internal process that God is trying to cultivate in within us really looks like. So that, like Beethoven, we can be moved to incredible joy and to experience the depths of the soul's delight, irrespective of what's going on in the world around us, irrespective of the difficulties that we may be facing in our lives. And what a great just resource this is to be able to experience true joy. What a witness this is to the living God. Let's talk about that a little bit, the basis or the foundation of joy. The Bible talks about the joy of the Lord. And that expression kind of cultivates this idea that joy is rooted in a oneness with God, that indeed that God created us for the ability to experience true joy. C.S. Lewis's autobiography is called Surprised by Joy, and he defines it like this. I think it's so powerful. He says, that is why we experience joy. We yearn, rightly, for that unity which we can never reach except by ceasing to be separate beings called we. Joy is intensely relational. And joy finds its fullness and finds really its foundation in relationship with God. And that's why substitutes for God can never truly satisfy. That God created you for many things. Your frame, your form, your body, your soul, all that makes you you is the product of God's design. It's not an accident. He formed you with the capacity to experience things, to experience love, to experience pleasure, to experience the aha moments of discovery and insight and understanding. There are many things that we were just created for, and joy, as it turns out, is really at the heart of what God created us with the capacity and the desire for us to experience. And it's when we seek to find joy, as everyone does in their own way, when we seek a kind of joy that is outside of the source of all joy, outside of a relationship with God, this is what the Bible calls idolatry. This is putting up God's substitutes to say, this is where I will find my joy. And the message of the Bible, Old Testament and New, throughout is this, that human beings seek their own sources of joy and always come up empty. Always come up thirsty. We talked about that in some detail last week from Romans chapter 15. The emptiness of a culture that has everything circumstantially. We have all of this abundance and affluence and all of the things that are arrayed out there for us in the cornucopia of possible experiences that we have in the affluent West. And yet we are so deeply empty because none of those things really satisfy. And my guess is that in a room filled as this one is, that there are many of us here tonight who are coming just because we have that sense, that gnawing awareness that surely there must be more. There's got to be more to this thing than what I've acquired and what I thought was going to make me happy, what I thought would be contentful for me, and just to feel, to realize that it's not. And so I'm not sure if I can define it, but there's something deeply lacking in my soul. And the Bible will say, well, part of what you're really lacking is the kind of joy that God intended for you. The joy that can only come as you are reconciled to God through Jesus Christ, as you are in relationship with the architect of your soul who created you for the possibility of relating to him and therefore fulfilling the deepest longings of the soul that he designed. And so that's, I like what Lewis is saying there, because he said, my whole life was a quest to scratch that itch that nothing ever did. And Lewis was affluent. Lewis was one of the great literary figures of his day, respected by all. He had a lot to be proud of in terms of his World War I performance and things like that. But nothing ever really got the job done for him until he began to really seriously pursue God. And the closer he got to discovering God, the closer, he says, I came to experiencing this thing that had been driving me my whole life, that quest for joy. It's awesome. Now, let's just dig a bit deeper here. The joy of the Lord is also described in Galatians 5 as the fruit of the Spirit. And that's an important kind of language. It says the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. And the point that we want to make here is that, and it's an important one for us, we're wondering, what are your expectations for growing close to God? What does it mean for you to experience more of God in your life? Well, that's what he's describing here. The person who God is rubbing off on, the person who has got their roots in the soil of biblical faith and who is coming to know God personally and is learning what it means to follow him and draw our life from him is a person who begins to then display the results of that relationship. And the results of that are called fruits of the Spirit. And the fruits of the Spirit are exactly the wonderful things that we seek in life. Love, yes. Joy, of course. Peace and patience, kindness, and so forth. All of those things. What are your expectations for the life of faith? What are your expectations for the person that God is making you into? The fruits of the Spirit. One of the reasons why we're doing this series is that a few years ago, I was thinking about this passage. I was teaching it in with our friends and our partners in West Africa. We'd spent a week together studying Galatians. And we got to this place, and I remember years ago, the old writer, Oswald Sanders, who had been here in the early 90s, he's written a lot of books that we continue to read profitably today about spiritual problems, about all the things that really help us understand our spiritual growth. And relating to this passage, Sanders made an important point. He said, every year I look at this passage and I ask myself, what will it look like for me this year to cultivate more of the fruits of the Spirit? What will it look like for me to identify those fruits that God has put on my heart to really focus on and to grow and to develop in? And being the Eeyore-ish type person I am, I just, my mind is like a laser went to this experience of joy that is often really lacking in my experience. And so I kind of set about to study this question, to put my heart before God, and to build an understanding of what it is that he's trying to do in my life. This study of Philippians is very much the product of those reflections. But I would put before you here as well, over these next several weeks, we're going to plumb the depths of some of these aspects of what joy is really all about. And I'm going to ask you this, so hopefully we can work together on it. Are you one who's prepared to to go before God, recognizing that this is God's picture of what he wants to do in our inner self. And God, what would it mean? What would it look like for me to really cultivate true joy in my life, in my heart? And I think that this is something that God is eager to grant us insight into. And as we begin to pursue the things that he is leading us in this regard, that we will begin to feel, like the song says, the ice slowly melting and the sun pouring down on us, and that lighter sense within our hearts that no matter what's going on out there, there's something revolutionary and beautiful and sustaining going on inside. That is our birthright as children of God. He created us to experience joy. And now, then he calls upon us then to pursue him in ways that enable us to truly experience that in an ongoing way and in an increasingly deepening way. And so what does that look like? It means that we have experience of God, his work in our life, even in the context, as we said earlier, in suffering. Jesus puts it like this. He says, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross. Jesus was looking right through the pain and suffering on Good Friday to that moment beyond when he would rise from the dead and bring life to anybody who would trust in him, that his death on the cross dealt finally with the problems that all of us as sinful people have before a holy God. And it's just that focus that of what lies ahead and the joy of what awaits that enabled Jesus to face real suffering, pain, abandonment by all of his followers, and even the judgment of God. Paul says to the Colossians, he says, I rejoice in suffering for you in my body, for I am participating in the sufferings of Christ that continue for his body, the church. He says, I rejoice in this suffering. Not for this suffering. He doesn't say that. He says, I rejoice in this suffering. Because I know that the suffering that I'm undergoing is part of what it means to strengthen your faith. And so when we have that perspective, it is, as one person called it, a defiant nevertheless. Okay, yes, there is suffering out there, and God does not remove us from the experience of suffering. But even in that suffering, there is a place for true joy, because we know that God is at work. He's at work in us, and God is at work through us, and it produces that pleasing sense that all is well with my soul. That the things that are happening outside, yeah, there's a storm, but there's something in here that is calm, that is sustaining, that sees purpose behind the chaos. And that therefore is a cause for rejoicing that God has not abandoned me in this situation. So let's just take a look then at this first paragraph in Philippians 1. And we want to talk about cultivating joy in partnership. He's really writing this letter as a thank you note to people from Philippi who have sent him money for his imprisonment in Rome. It's enabled him to get out of the dungeon and into actually an apartment under house arrest. It's made a huge difference. That way he's been able to see people from all over the Roman Empire who have come to seek his counsel about their churches and so forth. He's writing letters. Four of the letters of the New Testament are written from this period, Philippians being one of them. And so he's just recognizing the incredible moment that God has given him in this moment of suffering. And he writes this letter to the Philippians who have in part made that possible. And so he says in verse 3, every time I think of you, I give thanks to my God. Whenever I pray, I make a request for all of you with joy. Here's the first use of joy. For you have been my partners in spreading the good news about Christ from the time you first heard it until now. And so here, is just this joy that he has as he's praying and he's thinking about these guys who are his partners. And so partnership is one of these really important ways of cultivating joy. Partnerships are purposeful relationships. Now, I like bricks. Do you like bricks? Bricks are cool. You like bricks. That's awesome. Now, bricks, as cool as they are more or less useless in a big pile. They're great if you're trying to equip a riot or perhaps a roadblock, but little else. What really makes a brick all that that brick can be is when it's part of a wall. Now it has a useful function. Now there's real beauty. And so what we realize is that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. These are the same pile of bricks we saw a minute ago, but now we've got this really sweet looking curvy wall that everyone would be like, I'd like to have that in my backyard, right? And so it is, you know, you're a brick, I'm a brick, we're all bricks, but it's when we come together and when we allow God to connect the parts and we are of one mind and one spirit about the things that matter, now all of a sudden those relationships become partnerships. Together we're accomplishing something useful, something significant, and not only is it having an effect out there, but it's also having an effect in here. And so, for instance, the well-trod ground of Henry V in his speech after the decisive battle on St. Crispin's Day says, from this day to the ending of the world, he says, we shall be remembered. We happy few, we band of brothers. We happy few. Why? Because we've accomplished something together that we could never have done separately. And that ability to come together, to have each other's back, to fight the fight alongside one another, to do something significant with our lives, which require the contribution of others in our lives, is something that produces what he calls here happiness. That's synonymous, really, with joy. There's just something remarkable about giving your all, of laying your life on the line in tandem with your brothers and sisters. And you see the things that God accomplishes, and you walk away with this extraordinary sense of joy, a sense of amazement that we've had the privilege of participating in this event. Christian work, which is really what Paul is talking about here, is one of the great sources of joy in the lives of God's people. When I think of the significant moments of joy in my life, it has almost always been alongside like-minded friends who are deeply and unreservedly committed to the same purpose, to see God working in us and through us in the context of our home church and ministry like that. We live in an individualistic culture that says, go find your bliss. Find what's a joy for you. My friends, that's the wrong path. It's not how we were made. We were made to live corporately. We were made to be members of one another. We were made to do things as a body that have eternal significance. And when we are accomplishing things that really matter, those things that we are accomplishing begin to etch their form in our soul. You know, you could be an awesome, amazing hot dog eater. And there are some folks out there that eat remarkable numbers of hot dogs in a very short period of time. And I'm sure there's a certain kind of joy that comes with that, though, honestly, I don't get it. But the point is, okay, there's some joy in that, I guess, at some level. But the joy of doing something that endures forever, and that awareness that what you're doing stretches on to eternity, that is a source of joy that truly sustains the soul. Because God made you to have that experience. Partnerships are purposeful. He then talks about gratitude. He says, every time I think of you, I give thanks to my God. And there is just this sequence that is just unmistakable. It's in this letter. We'll see the pattern of just moving from the blessing of God to a response of gratitude, and that issuing forth then a deep feeling, a sense of joy. And I think that it's important for us, like Paul, again, he's in prison as he writes this, to be able to kind of rise above the circumstance to say that God is involved here. And that there is great blessing even in the difficult circumstances that he is in. And part of the blessing that he is here celebrating is the fact that these Philippians haven't forgotten about him. They haven't been embarrassed by his change. They haven't been afraid to associate with him, even though that's dangerous. And they have brought him a gift of financial means that enable him to live independently of the dungeon that he was consigned to. That's an incredible blessing. And it is in recognizing that blessing and then responding with gratitude that we begin to feel this new feeling in our soul. It's like, what is that? Oh, it's joy. Joy is the effect of expressing gratitude. And here, I think, just in an entitlement-oriented, an entitlement-driven culture like the one that we live in, it's hard for us to think about things as blessings. We think of them as rather as things that we deserve. And because we deserve them, we're not grateful for them. We just expect that that's the way life ought to be rolling for us. And we are stunned and amazed when life doesn't roll that way. And so we miss the moment of gratitude, and we miss, because of that, the experience of joy that accompanies the expression of that gratitude. That's why 9 times in this letter, Paul says, using the imperative mood, in other words, do this, he says, rejoice! Not because it's some kind of an obligation, but rather it's because it's an opportunity to really sense, feel, experience the product of a grateful heart. That's where true joy always comes from. Third, he says, whenever I pray, I make my requests for all of you with joy. So he remembers them with joy. He prays on their behalf with joy. And joy expressed in intercession, he's praying for them. And that's, I think, been a very common experience for many of us. As we think about other people that we're caring about, and we begin to pray for the concerns in their life, the things that maybe are hard times they're going through or whatever. And in that time of prayer, God uses that to shape our thoughts about that person, giving us a bit of insight into maybe what is going on below the surface of what we're seeing. That in prayer, we begin to have the heart of God for that person, for those people. And the result of that is an elevation of the significance of this person, these people that we are called upon, that we feel burdened to pray for, and with that, a sense of joy that we have the privilege and the opportunity to be involved in their lives and maybe to be used by God to carry a message that might really help them in their life. I really like the connection that he makes here between joy and and requests being made for his friends. Because I do think that that's right. We delight in people to the extent that we are praying for them. And how awesome it is to battle in prayer, to wage war in prayer for the soul of friends who are broken in various ways and whom God has called us to partner in life with. And when we begin to see, you know, some clarity and some movement among our friends, that is that we're seeing the miraculous hand of the Spirit of God in their life. That produces an incredible sense of joy. I've seen the hand of God. And that's what Paul is describing here. And lastly, there is this aspect of affection that I think is so critical to the partnership building that produces the joy that Paul is describing in this paragraph. He says in verse 8, he says, God is my witness how I long for you with all the affection of Christ. I long for you with all the affection of Christ. Here are people who really got under Paul's skin in a good way. That their lives were etched on his heart. That these are people that that Paul would go to bed thinking about and praying for and long for those times where he could be back together with them, wistful in the memory of being in their presence. And one of the great blessings, really, I think, of the Christian life is our ability to form these kinds of bonds of partnership with other people. I think about models of that. Think about the relationship of David and Jonathan. In 1 Samuel 18, verse 1, it says that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved David as himself. He loved David as himself. And there's just that something beautiful here, that there are emotional bonds that reinforce the experience of joy that we have together as servants of Christ. I think that aspect of it, of partnering in that way, has been some of the most transformative and powerful experiences I've had in my almost 50 years of following Christ. It's that coming alongside and developing a relationship with someone that we're gonna enter into battle with together. We're learning to trust each other. We're learning to practice grace with one another, because you get a little bit below the surface with people and you realize, man, there's a lot of maggots and worms in here. And so we learn to apply grace. And we fight the fight that God has called us to in our lives and out into the world that he's called us to. But in that context, the ability to form intimate bonds is a source of great joy. And there are several people here even tonight that I've known for many years with whom I feel this sense of a love and affection and an emotional connection that is so sustaining in this difficult life that God has called us to. And it's through these elements then that make up partnership that we are enabled by God, I think, in a deep and sustaining way to enjoy what joy really is. And so let's just draw it to a conclusion. I got a couple questions for you. The first is, if joy is something to be cultivated, what might be something you could do this week to experience joy more fully? And second, joy is found in partnerships. And so how have you found joy in collaborating with Christian friends?
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.